Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Oh, look out, world. Look out, world. Our producer stepped away for a minute, so it's probably going to go all... I'm kidding. Hi again, everybody. Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you. My favorite time of the week with another episode, another broadcast day in the world of the Suspendables with me and Russ Cortinel. I don't know how many we've done now, Russ, but...
I know.
I keep checking my phone going, good try, boys. Yeah, thanks. Okay,
yeah. See you later.
But people love it still, and we're happy to be
coming at you. Oh, look who's back. Look who just came in.
There's our, yeah, God, I can breathe again.
Here he comes. COVID cough coming to you from Ottawa.
I wasn't going to bring up COVID, okay? It's rearing its ugly head again. I see more and more people wearing masks. A couple of dinners that I'm involved in, like I'm a volunteer for a couple of dinners that are supposed to happen, and they canceled them already. Saying no, we don't know what's going to go on. Stevie, I think, has it. He's got the cold and all that stuff. You had it. You think you get a bad back? What else happens to you?
I get the sore back, night sweats, and runny nose. But okay. My taste buds are good when I had it.
You know what?
The biggest thing is my lower back. Oh,
yeah, that hurts.
I think two or three times now.
And I don't know, Russ, whether we've publicly. I don't know if anyone really knows what your stance is on the vaccine. So,
it's like a fucking oil change on a Tesla.
Stop. I'm just, I thought of you, Rusty, because we're going to talk about a bunch of things. We got to, the weather finally is nice here, Russ. We've got like an 80-degree day. Finally.
I've been keeping track of the weather because my friends are all complaining. So you get these random texts from people in Victoria, Vancouver. Like normally they don't want to leave because it's just so freaking beautiful up in Canada this time of the year. And it's been ugly.
Yeah. I'm not lying to you. So I've got a back patio in my townhouse. It gets a lot of sun.
Humble brag.
It's 10 feet by 5 feet, right? Okay. It's a very small patio. Okay.
Why did you come out and say anything?
Oh, okay. Okay. I did. Anyway.
It's so small, the mice are hunchback.
I'm not. They play. He's so short. He plays handball against the curb.
I had to put sliding doors in because the.
We were so poor. We went to weddings for the rice. Yeah, we were so poor. My dad used to take us to Kentucky Fried Chicken to lick other people's fingers.
Oh, that's gross.
Anyway, I'll give you an idea of how much rain there's been here. And this is quite true.
Can you send some to California? Because I can't water my front lawn.
Yeah, you can have all of it. I put my flip-flops.
They're called slippers in Hawaii if you ever go. Again,
you're really interrupting me today.
I know.
What's going on here? Okay, I've got stuff to talk about.
Okay, finally.
So they got soaking wet. And so I left them out there, Russ. That was 3 weeks ago and they're still not dry. Okay, that's how much rain we've had. 3 weeks they've been sitting on top of my barbecue. But I have a friend, Rusty, because it gets hot in California. But we're in some nice weather here finally. I got a friend, Terry, big listener to the show over in Dubai. As you know, we bring his name up a lot. He bought a bunch of merch and he dressed all. He's an educator over there and he sent us a great post where he dressed everyone up in the Suspendables t-shirts.
Nice.
He often sends me stuff about how hot it is over there.
Oh.
Okay, Russ?
Yeah.
With the Humidex, whatever. 51 degrees Celsius.
Jesus, that's 131.
Stevie, what, can you convert that for me?
131. It's
something like 125.
Double and add 30. Double and add 30. That's how I grew up.
There you go. So it's 130 degrees.
Jeez. Okay. Honey, can I have eggs and bacon this morning? Yeah, I'll just go inside.
Sure. Yeah, we can serve the whole neighborhood. Just throw them on the driveway. Rusty, wow. I want to ask you a couple things. On the show today, we're going to talk about an interview we had last week with a guy named Craig Stiles, who ran the one of the biggest hockey tournaments in North America. But I listened back to it. A lot of it, some of it we took out because of your reaction to some of the stuff he said. And I want to ask you about it.
Okay.
I'm not throwing you under the bus. Stevie's going to give us an update here shortly on the draft and the rookies and who's doing what. Tagger weighed in on the live thing. Not much new now. I think I've heard everything from every player.
Yeah.
But his take is kind of interesting. And I'm doing these life stories, Russ. I started doing guys' life stories. I go to they want me to interview their parents and get their life story archived. And I'm run off my feet doing it. I got a ton of people. Wow. But one of the things we do at the end, which is really interesting, is so these guys are mostly close to 80, these friends of mine. And as a wrap up in these interviews, Russ, I always ask them, where do you think the world's going to be in 10, 20, 30, 50 years from now? And there's a lot of interesting responses from people. So I'm going to and you're pretty thought provoking. You've got lots to say about things. So I'm going to get your thoughts on where you think the sports world's going to be in 25 years or the world in general. And also, James Caan died, and Rusty, you were quick to point out he was a friend of yours. You hung out with him in the 90s. Yeah.
Late 90s.
Yeah, we'll get your take on that. But first, Rusty, so this interview we did with Craig about these 10 and 11-year-olds that come up and play, they are handpicked. Mm-hmm. They're not teams. They pick individuals.
Yeah.
And they get the best from it, primarily, I think, probably around Western part of the continent, but I think they come from all over. There might even been some kids from Florida. And you, like me, I didn't realize that they're actually individually picked. Your reaction to some of that, Russ, was kind of settle down there, Craig. Okay. Kind of hold back a bit, pal. Okay. Now you said they're not the best in the world. They're not the best in the world. And I was talking to Craig after, and he said he knows a lot of guys. He was a good player. He's a huge fan of the NHL, and he played junior hockey, and he played. He won a championship with U of A, and he says he often gets that same reaction from veteran NHLers when we tell them that these kids are going to make the NHL when they're 10 and 11 years old, and you didn't jump on him, but you said sort of like, okay, pipe down. Okay,
yeah.
You don't know that a kid.
That's a little early to.
Is there bitterness, Russ, from some of the NHL players? Is the elephant in the room here? Is there some sort of like bitterness or jealousy saying, fuck off, man. I worked very hard, until I got into this thing.
So, no, you guys got it wrong. And so does he. The reason why NHLers that are veterans say that is because we grew up playing with excellent players that never played. So that's why he's missing the boat on my comment. Is I played with some of the best players in BC at a young age, and they never made it. And so that's where that comment's coming from. At 10 and 11, you can't tell. Obviously, I went to a tournament with Cliff Ronning. I think we were the only two to make it out of a 10-year-old tournament in Coquitlam.
Wow, really?
But there was a kid there, Ali Cook. And if you ask anybody my age in British Columbia, they'll tell you the best player in British Columbia at 10, 11, 12 years old was Ali Cook. And he got injured, blah, blah, blah. Life took over some stuff, but that guy was freaking, everybody wanted to be as good as Ali Cook. Mm-hmm. So, it's just, there's a lot of things that can happen. Growth spurts, girls, drugs, alcohol, financial situations, distractions of just don't want to play anymore, don't have the work ethic. There's so many hurdles for these young kids to cross just because they're great. I coached an all-star team out of Vancouver Island, and there were some excellent players there, and none of them, there was only a couple that made it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And anyways, I think it's not a bitterness. It's just a fact.
Right.
Not every one of those players is going to play, even though he's saying they're the best of the best.
Right. Right. So. Which that's we all. Agreed on at the end once right. we found out what it was about. But
yeah, I still think there's some kids left behind financially and politically because he's got eyeballs. I see it down here all the time in California. You know, this coach goes, "Hey, I'll get you on this. You know, I'll get you there. You know, you come work right. with me or come play on my team, and I'll make sure you're in that tournament up in Canada." So there's going to be a lot of that. Human nature of trying to build these great teams and making promises because, you know, you can't have one guy picking the best players. It's just not going to work.
What age do you think?
I think it's great. Look, I think the tournament's great. I think the idea, obviously, you know, what they're doing is fantastic, but saying that all these players are going to play in the NHL one day is...
Well, I don't think Craig was saying that either, but he was...
A lot of those... Maybe.
Yeah. We were just sort of double checking on whether there's a sort of reality check or a bitterness or a pissed offness with NHL players going.
It's just a reality. I mean, when I coach these kids, the parents were just, you know, they want them. We all want our kids to be great. We all want our kids to do well in whatever they do. And when they're 10 and 11 or 9 and 10, everybody thinks their kids got a shot to play in the NHL and the parents are free. They're just... Some are so wound up, it's crazy.
Right.
You know, they're there for themselves, not for the kids.
I noticed that when I had my kid in Timbits hockey, they call it here, where they don't hardly know how to skate. You get to go on the ice with them. They're so young.
You know how funny Paul Coffey is?
Totally.
Paul Coffey's just awesome. He's so he takes his son, he's 8 years old, Toronto, takes him out to practice, comes back. And they walk in the kitchen. And his wife says, so how is he? Oh, he's going all the way. It's unbelievable. He's totally pulling her leg. And she's going, really? He is? Oh, yeah. Hands down. He's playing in the NHL. And I never forget him telling me that, you know, that he was just teasing. And
sure.
Anyways,
sure.
It was funny. He had her going for about 5 minutes.
If you get a chance, man, if you're in around Toronto or anywhere else and you hear that Paul Coffey's coming for the dinner. You got to go, man, because
he's a great
I've known
speaker.
Him as,
wow.
Yeah, is he ever, but he wasn't always, he was so shy. It was tough to get comments out of him, but man, oh man, he's one of the best out there now on the circuit. One of my favorite golf stories, cause he coached his kids team, Rusty, like you did.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And, he's really sarcastic, but hilariously sarcastic.
Right? Dry.
One of the favorite ever was the ref, you know, Koff screaming at him about the penalty. Right? Yeah. And Koff's going, that wasn't tripping. You know, it wasn't tripping. And the ref comes over, he goes, it was tripping. And Koff would go, do you think you know more about this game than I do? Do you think you have more experience than I do at this game, pal? You know, and the refs would laugh their head off and so would Koff.
I was so excited to meet Paul Coffey. I just love the way he played and he skated. And so I'm in Toronto. Wendell Clark's up for Rookie of the Year, which he didn't win. Gary Suter beat him. And I was at the award ceremony and so was Koff. Koff probably won, you know, a million trophies, but we were at Pat and Mario's. I think it was Pat and Mario's. It was a favorite bar of the hockey players. And one hockey player, Dave Farish, owned part of it.
I know Dave's from Sudbury.
Yeah. I played with him in Toronto. So we used to always go there. And anyways, I'm so excited to meet Paul. So Wendell Clark and I go over and we're like, and he's with, I don't know who he's with. Maybe McClellan or something.
His agent.
Yeah. And you're sitting around drinking, having beers. And he goes, hey, you know, I really like the way you play. And I was like, oh my God, Paul Coffey's giving me compliments. And I was I was so excited. Anyways, we have a beer and we start talking. I'm feeling really comfortable. Like he's made me feel great. And he goes, hey, are you single? I go, no, I have a girlfriend. And he goes, oh, what's her name? I probably know her. It just freaking buried me right there.
Yeah. Yeah. He said,
what's her last name? I probably know her.
Yeah. He said to me one time, you got a girlfriend, Jimmy? I said, yeah, what's her name? Right. And told him, he goes, oh yeah, I tried to meet her, but the lineup was so freaking long. He meant a little something to him besides meeting her. Did you fear Paul Coffey to play against Rusty now that you bring up his name? I mean, he was, I guess, the best defenseman when you played Russ.
Offensive, best offensive defenseman, not the best defensive defenseman.
But right.
He was the best offensive. And I mean, we feared him on the power play and whatever. I guess, yeah, offensively, you were scared every time you were on the ice. But Kauf was an honest player, not really physical.
Right.
So in that sense, it wasn't, you know, scary to play against him. You had to keep him. You had to try to keep between your net and Paul Coffey because, man, the guy could fly. And Dave Gagne used to sit on the bench, and when Paul would wind up, he'd be like a little kid playing with cars on the floor. Mm-hmm. And it just drove Bob Gainey crazy because Gags go, and as he'd go by us, he'd go, wow.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
He was hurt one year, so he was home for 40 days straight or something, and him and I hung out every day. And then he finally was able to come back and start to skate. So he said, come on down, throw the gear on. And so we're just passing pucks and stuff. And then he said, well, let's have a race, you know?
Oh.
And I said, no, we're not having a fucking race. He goes, yeah, yeah. So we're going to start at the red line and go around the nets, you know, and back to the red line again. And I'm going to, from a standing start, I'm going to go backwards. Okay. Mm-hmm. You go forwards and I'll give you till like well inside the blue. Yeah. To the other net. I'll give you till the net. Okay. So you've got a 25% head start. Okay.
Yeah.
And off I go, right? Like a maniac. You know, and I'm wheeling around the net and I'm not even looking, right? And I got my head down. And I keep going. I'm across the other red line, bust over the blue line. And then as I'm wheeling around the net, you know, it's the home stretch here, right? I just see this. James, you know, like just so powerful. And he wasn't a big, stocky guy, you know, but so powerful.
Big streak.
And I got to watch him for
big,
years.
Strong guy. Yeah.
Anyway, Stevie, on that note, I think Kauf was undrafted. I think.
No, he was a first round pick.
I think Kauf was a first round pick.
I think he was seventh overall.
Oh,
I think that's like what we had in common. Yeah, I think he went seventh. I went seventh.
We'll get Stevie to look that up.
He was sixth overall in 1980.
Ah, fuck. You got me by one again.
Just nipped you. Yeah.
One again.
Speaking of that, Stevie, we've got to bring Stevie in all the news, hockey world drafts, contracts, renewals, trades. Okay. Signings, just the shit you and I hate, Russ. But we want to bring you up to speed, so we'll go to our knowledge. Okay, Stevie boy, bring us up to date, Stevie. Okay, don't take too long though. Okay, because we're gonna glaze over.
Well, I mean, that's a vague general question, but I'll give you a sense of what's gone on here in the last week. You had the NHL entry draft has come and gone. While a lot of people thought that Shane Wright from the Kingston Frontenacs for like the last year might go number one overall, he ended up dropping all the way to fourth to Seattle. And the Habs, who were hosting the draft, took this Slovakian kid, a left winger by the name of Jure Slavkovsky. And probably the story for me of the draft night was the absolute if looks could kill moment.
Oh.
Shane Wright's up there shaking Gary Bettman's hand and he's smiling, and then all of a sudden the smile evaporated and he death stares the Montreal Canadiens draft table as if you didn't take me number one overall, huh? Okay, watch what happens now.
Bad move, Russ, huh?
Good motivator for the kid. What happened to him? Why did he drop from one to four? What, injuries or bad play or what?
Yeah, I don't know the answer. He a lot of people went down to see him in Kingston from where I am in Ottawa. And they came away not that impressed by him, like not a dazzling, dominant 18-year-old. And I think more of it probably is the other guys reeling him in. He had a couple of Slovaks at number one and two overall.
That's a first.
I got a question for you, Russ, on that about Steve and I were talking about it the other day. So the kid's supposed to go one. He doesn't. And by all indications, they're like, why not? Even you asked, right? Why do you go fourth instead of first? Mm-hmm. Might there be, Russ, that maybe some coaches and stuff are going, the kid's hard to coach, you know, or he's
they do find out everything good and bad about the players. And when I coach kids, I go, you can sell on the ice, you can sell so much. And then off the ice, they're going to know. If you fuck up off the ice, they're going to find out. But on the ice, you can really, you know, you can sell a lot of things, but as a, you know, if the guy treats the trainer poorly, and I'm not saying, I'm not talking about this kid,
right?
But anything he does, it's going to, there, you know, that's going to be passed around. So, especially when you're rated to go in the first round, they're looking for anything to good and bad, but they're, you know, they're putting a lot into investment into these players, and they want to find out everything now versus later. And some things they'll put up with, like see the kid who got drafted by Tampa, how arrogant he was. I mean, oh my God, I would have a hard time. I'm the best looking, like he's dressed in a white suit. I'm the best looking. I turned the draft on, and his interview, I was like, oh my God, he's going to get abused when he gets to the locker room. Oh, if they still do that. I mean, I don't know how much they abuse guys anymore, but that was pretty arrogant. I mean, now he's just told the world how cool a guy he thinks he is.
Yeah, that's so
now
go
he's
well.
Got to, he's got to live up to that.
All you got to do now, kid, is go get, I don't know, in the first 20 games, go get 12 goals. You know, we'll see how
the best.
Doing.
Yeah. I mean, if you back it up, all, you know, good on you. But if you don't, you know, they're going to lay on you big time. The best interview I ever saw, and I don't know who the player was, but we were watching the draft years ago. Mm-hmm. And the interviewer said, so what are you going to do? What are you going to do now? And he goes, well, as soon as I can go to the gym, I'm going to go work out. I'm like, what a brilliant answer.
Right, right.
You know, right. Okay, I got drafted. I've got drafted in the first round. Now I'm going to go work harder.
Yeah, so, cool, man.
Anyways,
It's interesting you say that about the cocky factor, and because we did, you know, we did see Shane Wright give at least one interview within about a month of the draft, and it was on TSN.ca, and he actually said something along the lines of, "I believe I deserve to be the number one overall selection," and I remember sort of looking at that one sideways. So maybe, you know, I'm not saying that had anything to do with his fall at the draft, but who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that look, he was definitely pissed off. So he's probably going to work extra hard this summer to prove everybody wrong. And it might be the best thing that happened to him if people weren't impressed with him to take him one overall.
Right. But what's the upside, Russ was saying that. What is the upside?
No, he didn't say anything. He stared down.
I'm talking about Stevie's comment where he said earlier, I think I deserve to be the first overall.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
I don't see the upside.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
All right, what else you got, Stevie?
Representing
trades. Where I'm in Ottawa, the Ottawa Senators were all over the two biggest trades in and around draft day. One is the Toronto Maple Leafs acquiring from the Sens goalie Matt Murray. That's a guy that has two Stanley Cup rings. He's only 28 years of age. But when he left Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh was kind of done with him. Ottawa took him on, thought, okay, a change of address might help this guy out. It didn't help this guy out. He was injury prone and inconsistent over 2 years in Ottawa. And so Toronto's pretty much saying the same thing. Okay, maybe a change of address will help this guy out. And they took him on yesterday, and the Sens have to actually sweeten the deal, giving up a third rounder and a seventh rounder and take on 25% of his salary just to send Matt Murray away. So Leaf fans are hoping that they found the answer in goal. Sens fans are looking at it, scratching their heads.
Yeah, Russ, when this guy came on, he came from Pittsburgh, like Stevie said, and the Sens were upside down about him. And I don't know how else to say it gracefully, but he ended up being shitty. And partly because of some injuries.
Yeah,
it was a failed project with the Sens. And now the Maple Leafs are all a flutter that they got their hands on this guy. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Especially injury prone, Russ.
I always used to tell guys, young guys, when I played, especially forwards, two things I would tell players. I'll tell you what I'd tell the defensemen and the forwards. The forwards, I'd say to them, if you can score 20 goals, you'll be in this league for 10 years. Because teams will trade for that guy. If you score 20 and then you drop off, there'll be another team going, you know what? He scored 20 3 years ago and they're not playing him with the right guys. Let's trade for him.
Right.
Okay. And then it goes on and on. That guy will last 10 years. defenseman. I told this to Brett Hedekin. He was so nervous his first 3 years. Every training camp, he was the most nervous guy there. And I'm like, why are you so nervous? And he goes, I'm worried about getting cut. I go, Hedy, how long have you been in the league? I can't remember. You might have said 4 years or something. I go, every defenseman that plays three consecutive years is going to last 10 years because teams will keep trading for you. You're fine. Quit worrying and just worry about playing well. Be confident. And John LeClaire came up to me and said the best advice he ever got, or the most he appreciated, was from me about relax. Don't worry about scoring 40 goals. Worry about scoring 20. And once he figured that out, he said he went on to Philly and scored a boatload. But this goalie, to answer your question, why is Toronto excited? The guy won two Stanley Cups. He shit the bed in Ottawa, and now they think they're getting the kid from Pittsburgh, not the kid from Ottawa. Simple as that.
Russ, who told you that advice, or is it something you gathered on your own about the 3-year deal with defensemen and the 20 goals for?
Figured it out because I'd been in the league long enough to know it.
Right.
When I got to Montreal, I've been in Toronto parts of 5 years. Mm-hmm. So then after I left Montreal, so that now 9 years, I get to Vancouver. You know, I was more than halfway through my career. And so I saw a lot of stuff. I saw a lot of older players hanging on, like Toronto at that time in the 80s traded for all these older players that were done, and they were hoping there was, one more puff out of the big cigar.
Right. How many points did you get, Russ, in your first year?
I got like 20 or something. My
20 goals?
I got like 20 points. I played on the fourth line. I barely played. That's back when the fourth line barely played. Like, you'd be frozen on the end of the bench.
Lucky to get 5 minutes.
My breakout, like my next year, I think I got 60 my second year. And that's when was like, yeah. That's when
and there's no looking back after that.
Yeah. When I got my first, I had two big games in 1 week, and one in Chicago, and then the next against Detroit. And I think I got 4 or 5 points against Chicago, I think. And I had a good game. I don't know exactly, but the game against Detroit, I got 3 goals and 3 assists. And then I went, okay, now I know I can play in this league. Right. Like, it really took a huge game for me to realize that, if Toronto one day got tired of me, there would be another team that would want me.
Yeah, so good. I'm guessing Stevie probably has your stats in front of
him. Yes. Yeah.
I know the way it works. Yeah.
So you're talking about your first full season.
Yeah.
In 83-84, you played 14 games.
Yeah.
And you had 12 points. Like a raw rookie at that stage. Were you like Boom Boom Jeffrey on in the old Miller Lite ads? This game is easy as a point of game guy right out of the gate. And then obviously you had an adjustment period the following year, like you described.
So what happened was I came off the Olympics full of confidence, 18 years old. They played me with good players. I played a little bit with Rick Vive. I played with Jim Korn. They put him on my line to protect me. And then the next year in training camp, Steve Thomas cross-checked me on a breakaway, and I was concussed, and I ended up in the hospital. And 3 days later, I was playing in Quebec, and I got knocked out by Wolf Paymont. So I had back-to-back concussions. The second one, I don't remember anything until I was halfway back to Toronto on the airplane.
Yikes.
And that year, I realized just a few years ago that I had post-concussion syndrome because I couldn't get out of bed. We would fly, and they all thought I had jet lag because I was just a young kid, and I couldn't pass the puck from one side of the ice to the other. I thought it was my sticks. I went through like a million sticks. It's my sticks. And I was suffering from post-concussion syndrome that whole year. And so I ended up playing on the fourth line with Jeff Brubaker and Bob No Skill McGill. And we're the fourth line, and
Skill McGill.
I love Bob McGill, but Bob was he was a defenseman, a tough guy, and they had him on my line. So he was like the seventh defenseman, I guess, that year, and they put him on my line.
Thanks for that, coach. Yeah.
But anyways, that's what I really think I had. It was just all that, I came into camp. I was flying until I got those two concussions. And then the next year, again, had a slow start. I had a really good training camp and I was poopy pants. I remember playing in Boston and my brother was like, you got to fucking change your attitude. You can see it. I can totally, they sat him out that game and he was watching me and he goes, cause we played together in Victoria. And he goes, you got a shitty attitude. You got to change your attitude. So I did. And then, I started playing with Gary Lehman and Greg Therrien, Tubby, and we just started lighting it up, ended up playing really well. And, that was
what,
it.
What was your bad attitude? What were you feeling?
I was pissed off because I thought I deserved to be playing more and I was acting like, right.
Yeah.
the kid who stared down Montreal. I mean, you grow up being a superstar. All these kids are superstars.
Right.
And everybody's a superstar that's in the NHL when they're kids. So when you're used to being a superstar and then you got some coach telling you, no, you're not. And you're going to sit on the bench and you're going to play with this guy and that guy. You're pissed off because you think you should be on every power play. You should be on the penalty kill. And you've done that your entire childhood. And now it's different. And so it took me a while. And, you know, I had moments throughout my career where I felt, you know, right to the end. I remember Larry Robinson sat me out a few times in LA and I was fucking pissed. And I gave the assistant coach shit, Leach, because he ran the power play and they'd never put me on the power play. And so I had that in me till my last games. And when you lose that, like Kelly Rudy, we had on, he said, hey, the wins weren't as fun and the losses weren't as a big a deal.
Right.
And when you lose that, you're ready to pack it in. So anyways,
yeah. Stevie, what do you got, a rap for us or what?
Well, the other deal that I think is of note for our listeners would be the Alex DeBrincat deal. And this is a guy who since 2017 has been the eighth best NHL goal scorer. What Hawks fans are freaking out about is like, we get it. Our organization has entered a rebuild. They're coming off that terrible Kyle Beach situation. They want to start fresh and across the board. So why would you trade a guy like Alex DeBrincat, who's 24 years of age? Would that not be a guy that you'd want to build around in the midst of a rebuild? Hawks fans were pleased to get they got a seventh overall draft pick from Ottawa. But at the end of the day, that's a tremendous star sniper in the league. Why would you get rid of a guy like DeBrincat who can help you?
Chicago has a history of doing this. Who was the kid they let go to Columbus? The Russian kid who's now in New York. A really good player. He's an assistant captain there.
Artemi Panarin?
Yeah. They let him go. They traded him to, I think it was Columbus. And they let, you know, after they won those cups, I guess because of salary cap, they let go some really good players. But now they got a new GM. They're still doing the same thing. That does not make sense.
Well, he's just a tremendous hockey player. He's small. The one thing about him, he's 5'7", and he really hasn't had a lot of looks come playoff time. That's the only thing I can think of. There's two cons to that deal from Ottawa's perspective. One, he's small. Will he be resilient in the playoffs when the going gets tough? And the other thing is he's not going to have Patrick Kane riding shotgun with him. And Russ, that's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe they know more than everybody else because they see him every day. So there's something there. There's a reason why they let him go. We just haven't heard why yet.
Well, it could also be the $9 million deal that kicks in this fall.
Ooh, baby.
There you go. There's lots. So, good, Rusty, you're going to draft, right? You're at the table. I'm going to ask you, what are the top three things you want out of this player or to draft him? What do scouts look at? What's the GM going to pick? Who are you going to pick?
I guess it, you know, forget about the position. Just you want the best talent. Mm-hmm. You want a really quality person. And then Physical, probably. I'd say physical after that would be
so number speed, three. Puck handling, that sort of shit is secondary.
You want the talent, whatever position you want, the best talent, and then right. you want the quality person, and then physically want a kid who's a stud physically. So,
all right.
I don't know. I think those are. I'm not. You know, I'm so far out of the game that. But those are some great. You want great people, like, you know. You look at
the kid who said he's going to hit the gym. I love that kid.
Yeah. But you want quality people because when you go through the battles, the tough times is when you really see the true character of your team, and you want 20 guys with the same character or, you know, similar character right. that are going to fight and claw their way to success. So, that means a lot.
Well, thank you, Stevie. Thank you for the update. I could have done that.
Speaking of character.
Oh my God.
My buddy, James Caan, passed away.
Nice college boy, huh? Didn't want to get mixed up in the family business. Huh? Now you want to gun down a police captain. Why? Because he slapped you in the face a little bit? Huh? What do you think? This is the army where you shoot him a mile away? You got to get up close like this. Bada-bing! You blow their brains all over your nice Ivy League suit. Come here. Mwah! You're taking this very personal. Tom, this is business, and this man is taking it very, very personal.
Rusty, the reason we're bringing it up is because he was a friend of yours.
Yeah, so Alexander McGillney and I were sitting out in 1997, working out in Venice Beach with this famous trainer. He trained Chelly and a bunch of guys, and TR was his name. Great trainer. We'd go down there, and it was the Venice Gold's gym. And he introduced us to Jimmy Caan. They called him Jim, James Caan. And this other guy, this older Italian guy. He was a bit younger than James, but so we go for breakfast, and he goes, Monday night, we're having a party. Why don't you guys come over and watch Monday Night Football? So I go over there, and I've told this story where I brought a beautiful California cab, and it was all Italian guys. And and they start joking around, like they grab my wine and just kind of put it over there. But the guy was cooking all this food. I go, God, that's amazing. You're cooking for all these people in this party. And I look over, and there's Farrah Fawcett, and there's some guy play. There's a really good. Oh shit! There's a football player there. I went with a few of the UCLA Bruins football players that I had met. And then there was a couple actors, and then all these Italian older gentlemen. And one of the guys go, yeah, Vinny, he's used to cooking for lots of people. He just got out of jail.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So then we go to the final episode. We went to Hollywood Hills with Jimmy, party. It was the final episode of Seinfeld, and everybody was having these parties for the final episode.
So right, I remember that. Yeah.
Troy Aikman was there, and again, a bunch of actors, and James Caan walks in and gives the host a stack of hundreds, like maybe 20 grand, boom. Whoa. And he had lost a bet to him. And so we're sitting around, joking around, talking, and he said, you know, I lived in the Playboy Mansion for 8 years. And I went, what? He goes, yeah, I lived there for 8 years, and I hold the record. I slept with every bunny of the month for 8 years
consecutive. Jimmy Caan, yeah. So
that's 96 Playboy bunnies.
Nice, Jimmy. Attaboy, Rusty.
He was nice, a freaking beauty, man. Oh, and the guy who was cooking that night, he apparently faked that he had terminal kidney cancer somehow and got out of prison. That's the story they told us.
Nice move.
He got out, yeah, because he faked this.
Yeah, that wouldn't work today, but it probably did back in the day.
So McGillney, he's like looking around going, he's got, like, being from Russia, I think he got it really early on. Like, his head was on a swivel the whole time we were around these guys. Like, fuck, they could get shot at any minute. And I'm just this kid from Oak Bay. I'm like hanging out with these guys, not even thinking about you know, maybe one of these guys has, someone has it out for them. They're going to shoot him.
Right.
But McGillney, he had his head on a swivel, man. Whenever these guys were around, he's like, that bad guy, bad people, bad people.
That's funny, man. Only on the Suspendables. Jimmy Kahn knocks down 96. Nice, pal. Nice way to go. Every monthly bunny. Rusty, yeah. We are ending the show right there. I had other stuff I'm going to ask you. Hats off. The show's dedicated to James Kahn. Way to go, brother. Okay. Way to go. Every single bunny. I love this guy. James Kahn for president, even though he's dead. Okay. Yes, baby.
The way this president's going, man, James Kahn could probably win.
Right. Yeah. That's true. We can win now. Yeah. Yeah. Rusty, I got to bring people inside my world with how funny you are. You won't remember this, but I said to you one day, we were texting. I said, why do you keep just sending back LOL? And you said, well, do you know what it stands for? And I said, yeah, laugh out loud. You said, no, it stands for you're a fucking idiot.
I have told you quite a few times to fuck off on the text. Hey, well, let's talk. Hey, spring. Well, spring is gone. You got some sunshine out there.
Yeah.
You know, how is it going with the no car dating service?
Well, I'll tell you what, Rusty. I'll tell you what. I had my last checkup on my shoulder. I separated my shoulder at the end of May. So I went today. No physio, no surgery, nothing required. I couldn't believe the X-ray, Rush. You would know this, but the, you know, the end of your clavicle, it's actually, visibly separated, and it's just sort of hanging there. And the guy said, "Yeah, it'll never go down." And I said, "Won't it go back into the joint?" No, it doesn't. You know what he told me, Russ? I never knew is that some people are born without a clavicle bone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that they're born. So anyway, I'm back to stalking. Okay, I got both using my arms now. I'm putting myself out there with the ladies.
Nice. But it's not with or without a car.
No, I got my son's car because my son lives with my ex-wife got remarried. Yeah. There's three of them there living together. And they got six cars. So my kid's all excited. He gets to drive the Volvo.
The new husband said, give him a fucking car. So he leaves.
Give him a car. Get rid of your, creeping around.
Well, who's the guy smoking cigarettes on the front doorstep?
Yeah.
That's my ex.
Yeah. I'm here again. Oh, you're married? Okay, I'll go home. Anyway, I'm putting myself out there. I'm working on one right now. I'll tell you about it next week. Yeah.
Perfect.
I'll send you a picture.
Yeah, hopefully she's the post woman. So you see her every day, 5 days a week.
She's a cop.
Yeah. Oh, another cop? No, not another cop.
No, she's not a cop. She's a farmer. Geez. She's a farmer.
A farmer?
Yeah. She's a farmer. Yeah, I'm going to keep it much younger than me. So I might even ask you how I should be playing it.
You know, farmers have guns.
All right. Let's get out of here, Rusty.
Yeah.
Good job, man. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. TheSuspendables.com for all your shows and our website. And I'm working on new merch, Rusty.
Oh, boy. It's
coming along. And also, starting next week, we've got Russ Courtnell signed jerseys, Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens, and we're going to have a contest starting next week to give them away. So stay tuned, everyone, for that. Enjoy the nice weather, Rusty boy. Get back to doing what you're doing.
I will.
Buddy. Say goodbye to me.
See you, fuck nuts.
Tell me you love me.
I like you.
Yeah, but do you like me?
You're growing goodbye, on
everybody. We'll talk to you later, you're Rusty. Have a good week.
See you, pal. Of course I love you.
I know. Yeah. Thank you. Of course I love James Kahn.
Thanks for being with us. Please be sure to subscribe to The Suspendables today and share the show with your friends and followers. And find out everything you need to know about the show on our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.